Howard, the mother of counties, trod on and navigated by Lewis and Clark, home of the Boone Salt Lick Wells, Mid-Missouri's first attempt at commerce. Franklin, launching point of the Santa Fe Trail. Howard, so varied, from river bottoms and pancake flat river bottoms at that, to super fertile, windswept lowest soil hillsides with their 60-foot deep, rich black soils, grass prairies, and hardwood forests, to paper-thin topsoil land bellied with hard pan clay and deeper sulfur-laden veins of formerly heavily mined coal. So varied this county we call home, and so equally varied its 10,000 souls. Let's meet them, hear their stories. I'm Sam Stroop. Yes, let's get to talking with those as varied as the topography of their home here, Howard County.
I mean, it was a rude awakening.
So, Johnny, when you had been hit by, what were you hit by, a mortar, or what happened that caused all that?
A mortar was first.
Okay. And just what is a mortar? Explain a little more.
A mortar is a little explosive device that is used for over-the-hill shots and things of that nature, because you can get such elevation on it, but it's a small artillery round, about the smallest one they have, other than next to a grenade or something, but it's fired. And it's generally used for steep elevations. I mean, they go over hills and drop down and so on. You see them all the time. It's a regular nuisance for anybody in combat. And sometimes you don't get a chance to even hear it. I mean, bam, just dead right. It's just right there, fall out of the sky. And you may not be able to hear it go off.
How far away do you think you were when it hit the ground?
Right beside me, I'd say.
Right beside.
Huh. I mean, so close to me that I went into the air.
Yeah.
And I went straight up in the air. And I didn't even know I was up in the air until I hit the ground.
Yeah. Did you immediately go into a coma or shock then?
I was definitely in shock because my body was flopping all around. I was conscious of my body flopping around.
Yeah.
And bouncing out on the ground and all that. And it didn't last long, but...
What was the extent of your wounds then?
I was hit all over by shrapnel and the blast. And I had bleeding profusely. And just in the space. I was not here. I was there, but I wasn't there.
Was your skull cracked?
Yes.
Okay.
Multiple fractured, skull fracture, had brain damage and all that.
You lost your fingers too?
No, not then.
Okay.
But there was bullets flying immediately after that. Now I could feel them digging in the ground behind me and hitting me and so on. That's when all these other things start happening. And
did they start stopping bleeding pretty immediately?
Well, they weren't there. I mean, everybody that was anywhere in my vicinity had people that was wounded.
Yeah.
Or dead.
Yeah.
And all I could do was think and try to pull myself together, and I did. That's when I got behind this. Sandbags, and I had nothing in the head, and I had no weapon. I was done.
Yeah.
And I knew I was done. So there was nothing there but fear and trauma happening right then, and wondering what's next, because I could hear voices around me. They were running past me and shouting commands and all that kind of stuff. They had overrun. We had been overrun, and that's what happened. And the ones that went past, I'm so glad. I felt, but it was a terrorizing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to hear the voices and they running past, I just was waiting to get poked with a bayonet or something.
Yeah.
Or even shot again. It was just horror.
So then they air flighted you right away to Yokosuka.
No, I don't know about right away, because they picked me up. These guys that found me picked me up, put me in a poncho, and took me to the medical place where they were gathering bodies and they were injured, dead, and all that kind of stuff. And they were trying to evacuate me at that time. Mm-hmm. I do know that, but I was gone.
Yeah.
When I hit the truck, I was gone. And the truck took us somewhere. But I know that, but I was just out of it. I didn't know anything for 7 days. And I didn't know it was 7 days when I awakened and found out where I was in Yokosuka. But I was in such pain until they came back and knocked me out again.
That was a naval hospital there at Yokosuka?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. How long were you there at that hospital? A month? Two?
No, maybe a week, okay, and a half, week and a half or something like that. About a week and a half, I'd say.
And that was a solid brick and mortar building. It wasn't a
temporary. Oh, no, that was idea. Yeah, that was a.
It was the real deal.
Oh, yeah, Yokosuka's a big urban place.
Mm-hmm.
Both on the base and in the city.
Was it large open wards that held a bunch of people?
Large. Too many people. And everybody hurting and in trouble. And
probably people dying right there
ward. Right there. Matter of fact, it's when I did awaken and wasn't in pain and begging for a pain medication there was a guy, he had also been, he dropped there, a helicopter took off and dropped him back on the landing zone with all his ammo and all the weight he had backpack. Broke his right shoulder and arm, collarbone. And he come out and started talking to me. He asked me, well, he told me that they thought on the ward that I wasn't going to make it.
Hmm.
And now I see why the priest and the nuns and everybody gathered around but I was in so much pain I couldn't get with them with anything but the pain, and they knocked me back out, so they had me in another coma real fast, and the next time I awakened. This guy Mitchell was his name. He was from Texas, and he was upgrading me on where I was and what I looked like.
Hmm.
He didn't look good.
Hmm.
And he told me that.
Were there amputations taking place there or anything like that? Probably happened before they came to you.
I've happened on the ground.
Hmm.
On the ground in Vietnam.
Probably there you were on a lot of painkillers, and they'd probably started
morphine.
You on. Yeah, they'd probably started you on a lot of antibiotics for the wounds
all
you
of
had.
It. Yeah, there was all that going on. I was a pain cushion.
Yeah,
and I didn't mind.
Then they decided to send you on to California.
Yes, but I didn't know that. I just know one day they came by and said. And told a bunch of us we were out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And but we weren't. I wasn't allowed to take anything but me.
Yeah. And was it San Francisco or where did you? They send
no,
you
but,
there.
Well, it was Travis Air Force Base.
Travis.
Not far from San Francisco.
Yeah.
Travis Air Force Base, California.
Hmm.
And it was wonderful hitting the ground. Terrible flight. Terribly long flight. Nonstop, 13 hours.
Were you having to sit up in a chair on that flight?
Yeah,
unless
you just couldn't. They fix you up with a... with a place to lay down on the plane. They had a whole bunch of stretchers and things down the plane, but they wanted us to sit up if we could.
Was it a straight-through flight, or did they go, like, down to Hawaii first?
No, they stopped nonstop at Travis Air Force Base from that hospital. Well, we went a bus, ambulance, all that kind of down the road to the airstrip, and we was out of there. And it was nonstop. For 13 hours, people moaning, groaning, getting the shots and on the plane.
What sort of stuff were they doing to you at Travis to repair you?
Just drugs.
I see.
Just drugs, because everybody there was just traveling to get to another hospital. We weren't getting released. We were just traveling from hospital to that hospital. Then we flew from Travis to San Antonio, Texas. And then we went from San Antonio, Texas to a naval air station in, same thing, the name of the place now.
But a lot of shuffling around.
There was a lot of shuffling around. Yeah. And then we stayed in.
I guess there was a purpose in moving you so much.
Well,
don't know what it was.
I don't know. All I'm doing is I'm just going. They're taking me. There wasn't any questions. We're going, and wherever the plane goes, that's where we're going. So, Corpus Christi Naval Hospital.
Okay,
that's where we were, and I stayed there until I got a chance to come home.
Huh.
For a couple of weeks, and we all did down there. A lot of people lived in Texas. They were close.
Do you have an idea of, from the time you were wounded in Vietnam to the time you actually came home the first time, how long a period would that have been? 3 months? Longer?
No, maybe that. Maybe 2 months.
Okay.
And Corpus Christi. Because there was a whole lot of work getting done. And they had to. We had to get fixed. Everybody had to get fixed. It wasn't no just get up and go home, because everybody was still hurting very badly. Everybody was.
Yeah.
So when the chance came, I was highly enthused, to say the least. And a long way to go then, too, just to get to where I was going.
How long was it before you were finally discharged from the time you were injured? Was that a full year, or?
But I guess it was not long, because I went from Corpus Christi. After I went home, came back to Corpus Christi. I had to catch a plane and go to Camp Pendleton.
I see.
In California for more treatment.
I see.
And then it wasn't long before they sent me home on indefinite leave. And that was just a way for my retirement papers and all that to come.
So maybe it was a year and a half from when you were injured to when you were finally discharged?
I'd say something in that approximity.
And all through that time, it's just kind of going back and forth to doctors.
And surgery and all surgeries. That, more surgery.
Wow.
And
a lot of sitting around waiting for the next thing to happen.
Yeah, well, things were happening because I had, they were putting this finger back on and trying to get this all leveled out, and they never did. I mean, they're ragged now, but then they done some surgeries in the process of finishing, working on the injuries, and still I was just in rehab, so it was back and forth to the hospital. Had no formations or I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Like wait in line. I had no lines or anything. I just walk past and go in. And,
yeah.
Priority, yeah. So if I wanted to go eat, I just walk in.
Well, we've kind of covered what happened with your casualty and your initial recovery. There was a whole lot we haven't covered at all. But I kind of feel like we need to start talking about, I think you call it the 100,000 thing. And
Project 100,000.
Yeah, Project 100. For example, you applied for the Marines and they flunked you out. They said, we don't want you. And then they turned around and they said, despite all of our reasons for not wanting you, we're going to make you a Marine after all. What was going on? Why did that happen?
Well, the President Johnson, McNamara, Secretary of Defense, Moynihan, came up with this proposal to lower, because they had a problem with the draft. Too many people going leaving the country, going to Canada, Mexico, wherever they went. Even the president, one of the presidents left, he was avoiding the draft, which he did. And but they came up with this proposal to lower the minimum standard IQ performance so that they could draft somebody to fill the needs that they had. One of the generals on the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, quote, we better hurry up and get these morons in here so we can get the war going.
Hmm.
Exact words, I quote. Hmm. Now, and what they done was they just lowered the standards and they took retarded people. People with born with disabilities. People that accumulated disabilities in their early childhood life and all that. And they disregarded that. Because they sent this proposal to Congress. Congress said, no, we can't do that. It's immoral, all kinds of problems right there. But they done it anyway. And they enacted it. I failed because one was I was physically disabled. I had been paralyzed from the waist down when I was a kid. From a sled ride in the snow, it hurt my back on a rock. And that was one thing they took into consideration. And then they found that I didn't have a diploma from graduation. So I was rejected. But a week later, here was the recruiter at my house again talking about, do you still want to go? And I said, of course, because I wanted to get out of here. I wanted to get out of the little town and all that and join the Marines and see the world. And I did, and boy.
Was this change to the lowering of standards of what they were willing to take, was that really something that was legal for them to do?
No. Congress said no. Huh. But they just enacted it. And they done it. That part of that was what happened to Muhammad Ali, the heavyweight champion, boxing champ. He was fighting it all the way because he was rejected. But then they said they wanted him to go. And they're forcing him to go, even though he was, you know, he didn't have to go. His was a little different. He was a conscientious objector because of religious reasons.
Yeah.
But he still won the case in the Supreme Court. He didn't have to go. So, but then I saw these people when they drafted them. I saw them, they looked like they were troubled with general living. They couldn't read, write, do arithmetic, anything. Mm. They had no basic structure. And were physically, some of them were blind. They could not, they wouldn't let them even have a rifle at the rifle range. Mm. They took their weapons away and all that. Mm. But they accepted them. And I said to myself, I was befuddled with, what are they doing here? And, because then I wasn't aware. I didn't know. But I'm seeing these people that didn't have any business there at all. Could not march in step, never get in step.
Wow.
I seen this. I'm right behind the guy, and I was ordered to kick his behind when he got out of step. And that was too much. It just was, I felt bad. Because if I didn't kick his behind, the guy behind me was told to kick mine. And I'm not getting it. So, just a real bad thing. And it was going on. And there were so many people that just didn't belong. And some of them got rejected, but very few of them. The ones I was seeing was, I saw them even in Vietnam. And I don't know how that could be. They couldn't put a rifle together and take it apart, put it back together. Any of the things that they really needed to do, they were severely handicapped. And in combat, it seemed like the wrong time, the wrong place. Absolutely for me.
Looking back at that situation where Congress should have been the ones that changed the restrictions, instead they said, no, you can't lower the standards. But the administration of LBJ did it anyway. What is there anything that could have stopped that from happening? Looking back at it.
No. Not yeah, really. Congress. Yeah. They were that, but now not strictly Congress. They're yeah. in charge of what they're gonna let happen and what they're not gonna let happen.
They just said
they let it happen. They made it happen.
Yeah.
And they took the bottom out of that minimum standard IQ performance, because these guys couldn't even make up a rack, the bed, in a military order. Nothing could they do in order.
Maybe you can correct me on this. I'm thinking black folk make up about 15% of America's population. Does that sound right?
That's about right.
What kind of a feel did you get of how many blacks were in the Marines? Was it more than 15%?
Yes. Looked like it to me.
Yeah. Probably felt more like 35%.
I'll tell you what, there was an introduction to a lot of minorities, Mexicans, Indians.
Yeah.
All and black. We were all there. And in bunches. That's who's getting off the bus.
Yeah. Yeah, I had just finished reading your book called More Encore, and for the folks listening to this, it was an incredible book. You can get it on Amazon, and I would encourage you, if you're finding this interesting and would like to get more of the details of Johnny's story, considering going to Amazon, checking out for Moron Core, and it'll pop up, and it's something in order. And 2 days later, you'll be reading it. It's an amazingly informative read, no doubt. In that book, you mentioned something about them taking the 10%, and I didn't quite understand what that was all about. Do you know what I'm referring to? Some tests they
taking people that the IQ test.
Okay.
What happened is they were taking people in a percentage level on that test that were like 10%. They couldn't read, write the arithmetic. They had equilibrium problems, other physical problems. They're just not fitting to be in the military, and they couldn't even conform to most things that was happening, just marching, subsisting, making up a bunk to sleep in, a uniform military alignment with the clothes, and they just not what was not there, and they were in the 10% and IQ.
I see.
No eating, writing, arithmetic. I'm telling you, that's horrible. I couldn't even run right physically. Just was handicapped badly.
When I was in my naval career, I was trained in communications as a communications technician, and in my class of 30 sailors, there were two who were Marines, and it always just kind of surprised us that those two guys were at the very bottom of the class. And I just thought, that's strange. Why?
That's what it looked like.
Yeah. And they graduated, and I'm not sure where they went on to serve, but those two Marines were at the bottom of the class. And that shouldn't have been.
In my case, I saw them die. I saw them in combat.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one guy, the gunnery sergeant brought to me, and said, "Corporal, I want you to take charge of this private here. He's having major problems. We've disarmed him. He's not allowed to have any weaponry or any of that." And it was the guy's name was Private Lee, and he wouldn't even talk. He just shaking, and he was just falling apart, threw in a towel, and he was lost. He was just completely lost.
Wow.
And when they assigned him, after I told the gun, I said, "I have hands full already, gun. I don't think I can handle it anymore." He said, "We have to do something. What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I'm going to follow orders. I said, "Private Lee." He looked at me. I said, "I don't know what to tell you except we don't have time to talk. I run, you run. I turn the corner, you turn the corner. That's what we have time to do. We don't have any time to talk. No questions or nothing. We just run. So you try to stay with me. That's all I can give you. I'm afraid too. Probably more afraid than you." Well, I told him, "We don't have time to talk." And we took off from there. That's how much time we had to talk, because here comes another incoming round and all that. And everywhere I went, he went. And he used to run over me.
Huh.
If I stopped too fast, I'm hit. And he was a big guy. Big black brother. He was an awesome man. I told him, man, we had to take a break. I'd go around the corner. If I slow down, he got me again. I'd jump in the hole. He don't jump in the hole beside it. He jumped in the same hole on top of me. It was just bad like that. It just went like that. I know it didn't sound, but that's what happened. It was, I was Private Lee. You're going to have to jump in another hole. You can't keep hurting me like this. He was a big guy. He was a big guy. And I mean, when he landed, he landed. And he was in that hole, no man. And I couldn't put him out. It was just rough. It was so rough for him that In the hole we lived in the ground, that's where we lived, underground. This is a caisson. We lived underground, and we got 1,000 rounds a day coming in. So, and everywhere, I had to always get out of the bunk and go do this, get out of the bunk and go do that. I was the guy. And I had to drove a little mighty mite around this fire base at caisson, trying to get to the airstrip and all this and that. Supply depot, all of those kind of things. And I had to have Private Lee with me. He couldn't be left alone anywhere. He had to stay with me. He was with me. I mean, he was so with me, I'd jump in the hole with a that had a road grader in it, and he bam, and I got to duck the road grader on the iron and steel and all that, and then Private E coming. It was, I'd be jumping out of the little Jeep we were in, and this is gone, wherever it's going, I had to get out, find a hole. And here come Private Lee. He will not find his own individual hole. He's in the hole with me. Even if the hole too small for me, he's still in there. And it was that bad. I saw this like that. I experienced that for a while. We couldn't get him out. There's a staff sergeant. He was an older guy. He wasn't even, he came in, he was in the Korean conflict. And then we couldn't get him out of the bunker. One day he made a suggestion, that an attempt to defecate in a sea ration box in the bunker. Throw it out later. No. We all rejected him. He was the highest ranking member in the bunker. And no, we went on strike for that. And everybody in the bunker has a gun. So now, how far is this going to go? We have to go outside. You have to go outside. And it's a done deal. You're not doing it in here. And he put up a little fight about it, but he lost. It was so bad that the rats wouldn't go outside. I kid you not. The rats would not leave the bunker. They look at you like you lost your mind.
Wow.
And they just lived in the bunker with us, and it was a done deal. It was a done deal. Nobody, we didn't get to shooting the rats or nothing. There wasn't a point. They're not going. And we understood why they're not going out there. It was pretty easy for anything anywhere in the area but not go outside. But they had to go. And going outside at a time when you have to defecate or anything like that, you got to go. Just get your running shoes on. And you couldn't go to our place that was made, designed for us, for our bowel movements and things, the toilet, because it had a dud round had hit the ground and went under it. You could see the hole. It was just clear that what had happened, there's an artillery round down there somewhere. I'm not going to be sitting in this place when that thing decided to go off. And there was a guy, just happened to be in the outfit next to ours, that got blown up in there doing his business. And he lost his business. He lost his business, his goodies, sitting in that place when it blew up.
What state was Private Lee from? Where was his home, do you know?
I think it was South Carolina.
Okay. And what came of him? Any idea?
I don't have any idea. Finally got him out. By helicopter.
At
some point, they got him and did, and I really missed him.
Huh.
A lot of times I'm jumping in the hose and just, I still feel him coming.
Wow. Yeah.
And I don't know. I just don't have any idea.
But he got out of Vietnam alive.
Don't know if he got out of Vietnam alive, but he got out of Quezon.
I see.
They finally evacuated him to that point and all the rest of it. Yeah. And that's a good thing because there was worse things that happened as our outfit moved around. Worse things happened, especially the night I got wounded.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, I thought everybody was wounded. I mean.
Well, we have a volunteer military now. Have the standards of who can enter the military gone back up where they should be, do you think?
I don't think so. I think the Project 100,000 is still in effect. But the reason it was called Project 100,000 was because that proposal was to draft 1,000 men, I mean 100,000 men over the course of on a regular basis.
Yearly?
No, I don't know the date. I mean, they was getting them just whenever they needed it.
Yeah.
And I think now it's going to be whenever they need it, and they don't have to tell anybody about it.
I see.
They're just, I'm sure they've eased the regulations. Hmm. I just can tell. It just seems like that to me. But I'm not there, so.
I have it in my head, and so I don't know that it's correct, but I have it in my head that you were asked to testify about the results of this 100,000 project to some government agency.
No, I testified before the congressional committee.
Okay.
On the Agent Orange thing.
Oh.
And the draftees and the affirmative action program as related to the veterans and Social Security. So,
when would that have been?
68. No,
that had been. After you were discharged.
I was out. Yeah, I got retired in May of 70,
mm-hmm.
And I was with the California Veterans Coalition, I was a director and at the time, and we done strikes. We set in at the VA medical facilities in San Francisco and other places, but they were having problems. And I tried to help every bit I could help to get their disabilities and all that kind of stuff. I done pretty good at it, I think. They needed all the help they could get. They needed more than me. And they couldn't get any from the government. So I've done that. I've been doing that for, even now, I'm helping different veterans get their benefits. They just don't know. And it's really not my job. But if I don't help, and one vet doesn't help another, it's a problem. It just exacerbates the problem. So I've done that for all these years, and I'll continue to do it as long as I can. And some of them are walking around totally disabled and have no idea whatsoever. Now, why not? Well, that means the VA is not doing their job. Somewhere in the mix, somebody's not doing the right thing, because this is crazy. These people have been through more than you can imagine. And I didn't have a chance in the beginning. And they already were disabled, handicapped in some kind of way. And it just didn't happen. You're going to just drop them back out and then don't help them. They can't do the regular rehab. They can't go to school. Not qualified. They're not going to make it. They're in the retarded status still. Nothing changed, just got worse. It's exacerbated by post-traumatic stress disorder, being in the jungle, fighting for your life, with no reasoning, except they forced you to go do that. 10,000 miles from home. Everything, away from your custom, away from everything, family, everything. You're just lost out there in that world. And they don't have any idea yet. They can't even go read about it now. Still, all this time, and they've committed suicide, 35% above the national average. They're still veterans, walking into the hospital, blowing their brains out. Today. All sizes, shapes, and colors. That's what's happening.
So once you were discharged, came back to Missouri for a little while, but then you went back to California. How long were you there?
I've been I lived in California like 22 years.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I was doing most of my work.
Hmm. Yeah.
During that time, I was on the UC Berkeley Agent Orange Committee, and doing all the things that I could do to help.
So your main focus was trying to get benefits for Vietnam veterans. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on.
And other veterans. It didn't make any difference who it was.
Yeah.
My principle was to help the disabled Vietnam veterans.
There was a lot going on in California at that time. Black Panthers, Angela Davis.
All of that was happening.
All that stuff.
All that was happening.
I expect you were right in the middle of the stir of all that, or not?
No, I was
focused on veterans pretty
strictly.
Much.
That's why I was locked in. I was locked into that. That was my primary. That was it for me.
Yeah.
I joined nothing but the veterans representative. That's it. Mm-hmm. I didn't get involved in any other groups, and the only way I did was to give them advice on the Veterans Administration and how to better them with their benefits. I touched bases with everybody, everything that was going on around there, trying to wake them up. There were a few bikers clubs, the Hells Angels and things of that nature. There was people that had a lot of people that didn't associate outside their races. And I was even advising them too. I was helping vets. That didn't matter to me.
And you were staying very busy at that, so you didn't need anything else in your pocket.
No, I didn't. I had to leave all that alone. And I had my own problems,
now,
too.
What did you do for money during this time frame?
Well, I was retired. I got retired in May of 1970 when I got out. So I was drawing my VA disability.
Okay.
And then I done everything I could. I done worked in construction a lot. And a few friends, vet friends and all that, they worked in construction. And had contractor's license, which led me down that road. Mm-hmm. And I was good at what I done, and I could take it out on the work. The busier I was, the better I was.
And you were married and divorced out there. How long did your marriage hold together?
It didn't really last long at all. I mean, it was pretty much right now because, one, there were too many other problems. And my wife had multiple miscarriages in the process. I was still dealing with these poisons that I didn't even know I had.
Yeah.
And they did not, the veterans hospitals, did not let me know anything about the poisons. I had all these problems that I didn't come to me until recently. I mean now recently, years and years later, after all the emergency trips to the hospital, surgeons standing over me and all that, and threatening to drug me into oblivion and so on. And they had predicted that I would either kill myself or somebody else with the PTSD and other problems, so I have a handful.
When did you start discovering the helpfulness of martial arts, and when did you get involved
with
that?
I was involved in that before I even went to Vietnam.
I see.
Yeah. I was into that, been into that.
But it was after you became a Marine, or even back here in Glasgow some?
No, it was even before I left to be a Marine. I was, in my head, I was a martial artist.
I see.
So yeah. I was in practice there.
Yeah.
And been doing it ever since.
How has that helped you or affected your personality or anything you can say on that?
No, I think it gave me some discipline, and good things came from it. I have had my problems in the course of it, but I've been pretty well disciplined with it. And I still practice the disciplinary part. I mean, more thorough about sticking to the principles of discipline and self-defense and the physicality of it and what it... Here I am. I'm 75.
Yeah. So it's helped you all along and just...
Rehabbing.
Staying focused and keeping your body...
Because I've been
moving.
I've been so damaged over the years. I'm still fighting back.
Yeah.
So in order to fight back, I have to do something. I just if I stop, I'm done. So here I am.
Yeah. Here you are. Here we are.
Yeah.
I think we'll call it a wrap on this, and next time I'd really like to get into. What's been going on. We see it on TV all the time now. Lawyers asking for folks that were involved in Camp Lejeune and the damages to their
I was there.
Health. And we'll kind of get into that next time.
Okay.
Well, thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
We'll catch you later.